Spirit Radio Podcasts.
It's a pretty interesting time when we're analysing the COVID-19 crisis. And there's a lot of divergence of opinions on where do we go next? What is the way forward? When I cast my mind back to Thursday the 12th of March, certainly a day I will never forget, when the then Taoiseach Leo Varadkar announced the closure of schools, the message was clear. At that time, it was all about flattening the curve. It was all about making sure that our hospitals could manage COVID cases. But now, the way is less clear, with a lot of people thinking we should go to another lockdown so we can move towards a more zero cases scenario. But is that actually possible? Is it realistic without a vaccine? And is the price of doing this too high in terms of keeping pubs, other businesses closed, healthcare waiting lists increasing, and vital treatments not happening? Is the cost just too high? Well, my next guest is a researcher in political philosophy at the University of Navarra in Spain, and he's been watching with interest the political decisions being made around Europe and indeed the messaging that goes with them. It's great to have with me David Thunder on the line. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Wendy. Very well, thanks.
So in terms of the coronavirus, I mean, we're learning every day. There's new pieces of research coming out every day, but still there's a lot that we don't know, or it feels a lot of the time there's a lack of consensus, which probably makes policymaking a bit difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the great challenges associated with a brand new pathogen that has basically landed on the planet Earth in December is that we're faced with a lot of unknowns. Nonetheless, we have learned quite a lot in the last 5 or 6 months. We do know that this disease, COVID-19, targets in particular elderly people with underlying diseases or chronic conditions, especially people over 65 and over 70. And we do know that children have an almost zero risk of being affected by COVID-19. So there is some information that has been coming out that's very
interesting. So are we not giving enough attention to that? I mean, I'll give you an example, David. Earlier on in the week, there was a piece by Derek Scally, who writes from Germany, and he was looking at, when you put the two studies together, about 7,000 students that had resumed education in either kindergarten or school. And what he found was that less than 1%, these studies seem to show, had COVID antibodies. So not that these children actually got sick, but that they had the antibodies. And I was wondering, you know, why is this kind of good news not being shared? It's kind of buried in the newspaper. Is enough attention not being given to some of the good statistics?
Yeah, I think that I have to say that my general impression is that there is a certain kind of agenda behind the way in which the COVID news is being presented, both in the media and by politicians. And the agenda basically is to make people more careful and more wary in general, and to make people do more social distancing and wear masks and so on.
But there's probably nothing wrong with that, is there?
There's nothing wrong with that as such, but I think it's led to a biased picture in which the risk of COVID is constantly being presented to us, whereas the limits of that risk, in other words, the fact that COVID is not, in fact, as damaging as it was originally thought, that has not really been conveyed very, very well to the public.
In terms of just the cost to society, I mean, so many different businesses, industries, individuals. We could go on and on about those who've been so negatively impacted, but are we actually taking that into account? In other words, balancing the cost to society versus the risk that COVID poses?
Well, the National Public Health Emergency Team, which is responsible for issuing guidelines, health guidelines for how we handle COVID risk in terms of public health, they do not have economic training, so they're not able to, and they're not sociologists. They're public health experts, so they're not really in a position to evaluate the wider risks for society, and that's the reason why we can't look to them to really to understand those wider risks. It's up to the government to analyse those risks and present them honestly to the public. And one of my concerns is that COVID is here to stay. I mean, it's endemic in the population already. It's not that it's coming from outside. The majority of new cases are local cases, community cases. It's part of our life now, and we have to learn to live with that risk. With other types of risks, we live with those risks and we adapt to them routinely. But with COVID, we don't seem to be willing to simply manage the risk. We want to eliminate it, which is a very strange attitude for a disease that is basically circulating in the population, much as the flu is circulating. Imagine if you proposed to eliminate the flu completely And I mean, it would be an excessive overreaction. Just as an example, we have many road deaths every year, and we don't reduce the speed limit to 40 kilometers an hour. People die from obesity and from other diseases related to sugar, but we don't close our chocolate factories. People die from skiing accidents. We don't close ski resorts.
Is it about the accepted level of risk and a balancing act there? And it is a delicate balancing act, but in terms of that it is a risk, but there's lots of risks, as you say, that we take every day. We do get in the car. There is a risk that I could die driving home from work, but I take precautions. I try to drive to the speed limit and I wear my seatbelt.
That's exactly right. It's estimated that between 200 and 500 people die annually in Ireland from the flu. The excess deaths associated with COVID-19 between March and June, according to a HICA report, are between 1,100 and 1,200 excess deaths. So that's something like 2 to 3 times the number of people who would normally die from flu every year. It's a tragic, but it still is a very, very small percentage of the population. And it is something like what you could imagine to be a very severe flu season.
You can understand, David, that there is a lot of fear surrounding this virus, you know, and it's, in a way, maybe it's easy for me to say maybe we're getting the balance wrong, but, you know, thank God I haven't lost anybody due to the virus, but maybe I'd have a very different attitude if I had, you know, if I had lost an elderly parent or something like that, or if one of my children was sick and this had made them sicker. So you can understand that people have a real fear of this disease.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, God help. I mean, I would absolutely, it would be heartbreaking to lose a relative to COVID, especially if they had to die alone and without their family around them. I mean, that is absolutely heartbreaking. But I think that while we have to be compassionate about sickness and death, we also have to make a wider judgment about the future of our society and about the good of the whole society taken as a whole. And as I was discussing before we came on air, the economy, if you destroy the economy, if you destroy the tourism sector, if you destroy the catering, the restaurant sector, what you end up doing is tanking the economy. And as a consequence of that, you reduce funding to public health care. And
which is already suffering.
Funding.
Well, it was dysfunctional before COVID, but we're reading today that waiting lists are going to be going up by 130%. Life-saving cancer treatments are only operating at 70% in some cases. I know it's very hard for us to say, David, and we can't predict, but is it a scary thought that more people might actually die from some of the impacts in terms of the healthcare system being impacted and things like mental health, you know, and people who've been really badly affected economically as well, and that impacting on their health?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we have to take into account that human life is not just about biological survival. We have to take into account things like quality of life, the quality of our health, the quality of our mental and physical health in the long run. And while I don't have access to any comprehensive survey or study or overview of the effects of COVID measures, it's very clear by now that many of the COVID measures have a lot of bad side effects for our health system. Lockdowns result in spikes in need for psychiatric treatment, depression, domestic abuse, untreated illnesses because people are afraid to even go into the hospitals. And so forth.
So the cause of secondary death.
We won't know for years what those side effects are, but my concern is that the NPHET and the government, they have been rhetorically focusing constantly on the risks of COVID, and they've neglected the fact that COVID interventions also have serious risks attached to them.
It's a very good point, David. And is that where it needs to be the government looking at more targeted measures specifically aimed at protecting the most vulnerable?
Absolutely. I mean, we know that more than 50%, I've seen it estimated up to 60% of Irish COVID deaths were attributed to nursing homes. So that's a massive percentage, over half of COVID deaths in Ireland. So it's clear that if we take the right steps, put in place the right protocols in nursing homes, provide them with the care they need, don't send COVID patients back into nursing homes and so forth, we can reduce, massively reduce the number of deaths without shutting down the economy, without putting people under house arrest, without telling people they can't walk 5 kilometres from their house and so forth.
Finally, just to ask you, as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, this objective in the beginning was flatten the curve so we can manage, flatten the curve, etc. And we've achieved that, thank God, and it seems to be staying flattened. Do you think that objective should still be our focus, or what about the kind of discussion of no, it needs to be more towards zero cases?
Well, I think that our focus should be on making the caseload that ends up in hospitals manageable. And that means flattening the curve. It means keeping the level of hospitalization caused by COVID-19 at very low levels, which is exactly what we have now. We have very, very few hospitalizations as I speak. If you look at any curve, you'll see that it's extremely low. It's been flattened. But the discourse coming from the government now tends towards the idea of eradicating the virus. Eradicating the virus. What would that even mean? The virus is already at large in the community. And as Professor Sunetra Gupta, Professor of Theoretical Epidemiology at Oxford, commented, she is baffled by the idea of annihilating this kind of virus. That whole rhetoric of annihilation or eradication just is utopian. It's totally utopian because it's impossible to eradicate a virus like this that's already at large in the community.
So really it's about learning to live with it and protecting people in a balanced way.
Exactly. Learning to live with it and manage it in a responsible way, taking into account a holistic picture of the good society, a society that's worth living in which people's health needs and the vital needs are attended to, not just in regard to COVID, but in regard to health, economy and so on.
David Thunder, thank you so much for joining us on the programme today. That's David Thunder, researcher and lecturer in political philosophy at the University of Navarra in Pamplona in Spain, just giving us his thoughts there, asking the question, is the cure for COVID worse than the disease?
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.